Blog Talk Radio.
This is Lori Smith here. This is One Child to Be a Survivor to Another Restoration, and it's Monday morning, February the 5th, 2018. Glad to be here, 7:30 in the morning. middle of the winter, and I took a couple weeks off there just for a break, working on some other stuff and just busy and decided to take a couple weeks off. So hopefully you're all doing well, and I appreciate everybody who's been tuning into the show, as always. And if I keep going here, next year would be 10 years on Blog Talk Radio. Actually November of 2019, I guess. So I still have a ways to go, I guess. but we'll see how long I keep going. I've actually changed the show, so I'm going to keep it on Mondays, but I'm going to just go for an hour just on Mondays instead of doing Monday, Friday. I'm just going to do one a week, going down to one a week, and but stay on for an hour. We'll have more time to look at different things and stuff. I find the half an hour really isn't quite long enough to kind of get into certain topics and look at different things. So, yeah, this is just a morning reflection for me, really. And hopefully it's helping other people out there, too. Just looking at, you know, positive reinforcement, self-care, coping mechanisms, things like that. We never really get to a meditation for the day, and we never have time for that, or even the coping mechanisms. So I think that's why I want to move it to an hour show instead of a half an hour. It's a little bit lengthy to be listening to, but that's why I'll just do one a week. And we'll just go through a whole bunch of different topics and look at some different helpful information. Hopefully it's helpful for you. So yeah, this show, you know, it's really geared for adult survivors of child abuse. And if you're a survivor yourself and you're not sure, you know, if you're safe enough to be listening to this or if you should be listening, if it's going to trigger you or not, then you need to make sure that you're safe enough to listen. So get that information. You can get it from Havoca, H-A-V-O-C-A, Havoca.org. I did pop that in the chat room. Their link there to what we're going to be looking at today. And if you're, or you can get it at ASCA, Adult Survivors of Child Abuse, a Morris Center program. They have a Survivor to Thriver workbook that's 60 pages long. Just the first safety, first chapter is 60 pages long. It's a major topic, so you want to make sure that you're safe enough to be listening. If you're not, just turn the show off and make sure that you are safe enough before you listen to something like this. Anything like this. It doesn't have to be my show. Just anything dealing with abuse or things that may trigger you. Because you don't want to be triggered and have a miserable day and go backward in your healing journey. That's just no good. So make sure you're safe enough to be listening. Otherwise, turn the show off. You won't be hurting my feelings at all. And anybody else listening, you know, you have to listen at your own discretion because I'm talking about abuse. Very, very difficult subject, difficult topics. And these are very painful. And, you know, if you're just not sure, you know, if this is going to be right for you to listen to, then you need to make the right decision for yourself. You know, it's only you can do that for yourself. So make the right choice. And we'll get right into this. We're looking at a Havoca section called, it's Havoca Help for Adult Victims of Child Abuse. And Havoca.org, they have a whole lot of topics there for adult survivors of child abuse. We're looking at, we left off at grief. So that's where we're going to pick back up. So morning reflection, how am I doing this morning? How my healing journey? Any particular things I need to work on? This is stuff I can ask myself in the morning, you know. How am I feeling right this morning? And things like that. It's good to get in touch with ourselves and see how we are doing. I'm doing good, actually, not bad. I've had some triggering and just, you know, just sort of normal triggers happening here and there. Obtrusive memories and some flashbacks, things like this. But not too bad. I wouldn't say, you know, that it's taken over my existence or taken over my day or anything like that. I'm able to come back into the present, come back into, you know, the right now, the here and now. But I have had a lot of particularly painful memories come up, and this last couple of weeks I've took a break and actually decided to do something fun instead of just the normal stuff that I do, which is fun anyway. But I'm working on a bachelor of ministry, trying to work on a bachelor degree. I finished my associate's a few years back, and now 5 years later I'm trying to finish up my bachelor degree. So that I'm working on, and I do enjoy that, and I find that very helpful and comforting in my own spiritual journey. But I needed something else in there, so I took up guitar. And so it's just been a fun couple of weeks just trying to learn the basics of picking and strumming and stuff. So that's been kind of fun for me, something different, you know. And but it has also put a little bit of a mask on my feelings and emotions dealing with the abuse. And so I have to get back into my healing journey. I can't just put it off and stay in guitar land sort of thing, or stay in my studies. So this is why I do these shows, to keep me on my healing journey. So they'll keep working on it instead of just finding other things to do and putting it off, right? So, but it is fun, and I'm glad that I'm doing something that's positive, you know. And I think the, you know, learning an instrument, learning a musical instrument is a positive thing for sure. So anything we can do to learn and to grow and to have fun, you know, whatever. I mean, these things are helpful. But I still have to come back to reality, and that is that I'm working on my healing journey. So I can't put it off. So I'm still working on it. And so how am I doing? I'm doing good, I think. I'm still staying on things. Any particular things I'm working on? Not really. I have put off my... some of the work that I was doing on the CSA child sexual abuse, I've put that right off. And I'll probably get back to that later this year. I'm actually really a little, I would say, over inundated right now with too many things going on. And plus, I'm trying to learn guitar now. So I'm like, I've got pans on the fire. Too many pans on the stove going at the same time. And I'm going to try to get back to that, I think, in the springtime or summertime, early summer. Get back to that workbook because it's very helpful. And I need to work on a lot of things, actually. But how am I feeling this morning? This is something that I can get in touch with myself. We can ask ourselves this question. How am I feeling? Pretty good, actually. A little bit, back to reality with Monday morning. I'll have to work today and get back into my normal routine after the weekend. But otherwise, I'm feeling pretty good. I'm sort of half asleep here this morning, actually. I didn't have a very good sleep. I don't sleep well on Sunday nights, ever, never have. And so Sunday nights are kind of harsh. Like, I usually wake up pretty tired Monday, but I'm going to keep the shows on the Mondays because it works for me to. I'll make sure that I get them done. If I have them on another day during the week, I might not do it. I'll just get busier. I'll be like, oh, I don't have time to do it. So I'm going to keep the show on Mondays and just go for an hour from starting next week. No, maybe next week is a half an hour. But after that, it's an hour long. I've set them up for an hour, so we'll have more time to look at stuff. So we'll get right into this section here. This is Help for Adult Victims of Child Abuse, Information for Survivors under that tab. You can go to the chat room if you want to. The link is there. And the grief is what we're looking at. Bargaining is what's up next. We looked at denial, and now we're moving on to bargaining. Grief, denial, and bargaining, they said here, often overlap. I'm just reading right from their page. When the denial becomes too great, the bargaining phase usually takes over. During the bargaining phase, the victim will acknowledge that something terrible happened, but he or she will try to convince themselves and others that there was no trauma associated with the event. And this is the yes, but stage, quote unquote, yes, but stage of the recovery process. The therapeutic task in this stage is to overcome family myths and social stereotypes and misinformation that allows child abuse to take place in the first place, preventing victims from talking about it and about the impact it has had on them. And one form of bargaining is pseudo-forgiveness. And this occurs when a victim goes straight from the denial stage into the forgiveness stage without experiencing other emotions associated with the abuse. True forgiveness, they said here, doesn't come straight from denial. It emerges only after a complete understanding of what has happened has occurred, including the nature of the wrongs and where the responsibility lies. Bargaining also raises its head after the victim's first admittance that the abuse actually happened. And once the abuse is out in the open, the euphoria of the secret being lifted is often followed by the victim thinking that that was all he or she needed. And now that the weight has been lifted, they're free to continue their life and forget about the abuse. This, of course, isn't true. Again, a good way of dealing with the bargaining phase is to write a letter. Write a letter for each side of the story. For example, write a letter arguing your point and then write a letter arguing against it. Another side of bargaining is requiring outside proof that the abuse actually happened. In other words, the inability to trust your own thoughts and feelings. Evidence of this nature is very hard to come by. Adults very rarely admit they were abusive to children, so the only evidence is that of the emotional scars left on their victims. Trusting your own feelings and emotions will take time, but it isn't impossible. So that's their section on bargaining. And I mean, there's a lot more to it than all of this stuff is very brief, brief little snippets, but it's helpful to sort of take a look at it. And I mean, bargaining is, they've got here, as far as the grief work, dialogue and bargaining. So this is like the first stage is normal functioning, then there's shock and denial after the abuse happens, or we realize that we were abused or whatever. Anger comes in, and then that's the third stage. Depression and detachment is next, and then dialogue and bargaining. This is what we're looking at right now. And bargaining, I mean, I don't know. That's a huge problem for a lot of people. I know that a person, I mean, even for myself, I've wanted to sort of use that. So I was abused, I could say, But, other people were abused more than me. That's another way of bargaining. Other people have been abused worse than myself. That's a way to kind of make it seem like it's not as bad as it was. It's a form of denial, kind of. It works hand in hand, like they were saying here. It works with the denial thing. It often overlaps it. Because we could say, I've heard a lot of survivors, over the years, and just seen a lot of material out there where survivors will say stuff like, that person didn't know what they were doing, and so it's not really their fault, or things like this. You know, the person that abused me couldn't be held responsible because they didn't really know what they were doing. And that's actually a form of denial, a form of bargaining. It's a way to get around the pain. It's a way to say, yeah, but, you know, it wasn't that bad. Or yes, but that person didn't know what they were doing. Or yes, but, you know, I love that person and they didn't mean to do this to me, sort of thing. This happens a lot in domestic violence situations, I think, as well. Because in domestic violence situations between two partners, you know, one's abusing the other partner. The other partner says, yes, but, you know, he loves me or she loves me or whatever the, you know, whoever the other partner is that's abusing the other person. You know, or they didn't mean to do it. That's a big one. You know, I could look back and say, oh, my mother didn't mean to do these things to me or my dad, you know. But regardless of whether they meant to do them or not, the damage was done. And that's where looking at it realistically, you know, it's easy to sit there and excuse this stuff away. It feels better because then we can say, oh, well, you know, my mom didn't mean to hurt me or my dad didn't mean to hurt me or whoever the abuser was in the situation. They couldn't control themselves or they didn't have the proper skills and tools to help bring me up properly or to raise me properly or whatever it is, you know. Making excuses, really, for these abusive situations in our lives where somebody's abused us in our past, like in our, and in, especially with child abuse. I mean, we're dealing with thoughts and feelings that are so intertwined and a part of us that it's real easy to go into something like this. And that is a form of denial because what it does, like they said, you know, especially it occurs when victims go straight from the denial stage into the forgiveness phase without experiencing other emotions associated with the abuse. So true forgiveness doesn't come straight from denial. It emerges only after a complete understanding of what's happened, of what has happened and what's occurred, you know, including the nature of the wrongs and where the responsibility lies. That's sort of where I started with my healing journey was writing my book. You know, I was started out as a blog, not so fond memories growing up in an abusive household. And that was a blog, just a public-facing blog out there. And then a friend of mine suggested that two people actually said I should publish it as a book, so it became A Life of Death or Redemption. But by me writing that blog, it was very helpful because I took a look as a third-party person at what is, instead of saying, oh, my mom did this or my dad did that, and you know, I was telling the truth about what happened there, but I was looking at it as a third party when I was writing it, even though I wrote it from my eyes at like maybe the age of 13. Right? That book starts out roughly right around 13 years old. That's right from my eyes at about 13, looking back and then looking forward. And it's like, you know, it's real easy to just say, oh, well, my mom, you know, I loved her so much. And, you know, because so children in abusive situations, especially when it's a parent or somebody, a caregiver, or somebody in the family that the child knows, loves, and trusts, you know, and then that person hurts that child, you know, or in my case, it was both my parents and one of my brothers mainly that were responsible for the abuse. And, I mean, I love them all, and what they did to me was incredibly wrong. I can't deny that. I mean, I could sit there and say, oh, I loved my mom, you know, and she was just struggling in this abusive marriage and she didn't want children and she was abused herself. And I could make all these excuses for her. See, that's what everybody else does. all the people that know our family situation make excuses for my mom's behavior. And they just make it seem like, oh, but, you know, she did. She had a hard life and she wasn't that bad to you, you know? And I'm like, well, she cracked my head open with a rolling pin and beat me silly on many occasions and, you know, hurt me severely, burned me in the oven, you know, called me names, put me down, ran me down, psychological abuse. I mean, that's why I thought, you know, no, there's the truth and then there's cover up. And this is why I guess, you know, it's quite interesting how where they said that, you know, a person has to get past the, you know, that whole family, you know, the sort of dysfunctional family type stuff that it causes survivors to shut down and not talk about it and not get help. Because, you know, so many people in the family aren't at the same stage or are in denial, right? And so they're going to obviously side with what seems rational to them, which is to not make waves. Let's not talk about it. You know, let's not cause any problems here. And, you know, a lot of my siblings were like that. And so, you know, for me, I'm kind of the only one that's ever done this, just go public in the family. It was quite shocking for them that I would come out and tell the truth, right? Because they want to see things differently, especially my sister, who's 5 years older than me. She's really in denial. She's actually, I think she's dissociated. She's a DID. And she might have more than one personality. I don't know. I mean, I just think that I know for sure she's DID. And she's definitely dissociating all the time. And she also is just in denial, big time. And she just, you know, I mean, she got that rolling pin from my mother. When my mother was divvying up her stuff, you know, to her children, which was just me and my sister left. All the other siblings were either dead or in Canada. And, you know, it was my sister got the rolling pin, right, which was, I wouldn't have wanted it anyway. My mom beat me with that thing. And, you know, my sister, you know, the only thing she can remember is, oh, Mom made such wonderful cookies. And she did such wonderful baking, and she just loves that rolling pin. And when I go see her as an adult, you know, years later, this was a few years back, quite a few years back now, because I've cut them off a long time ago. But, you know, I go see her, and she brings out this rolling pin. It belonged to my mother. And she's like, look, Mom's rolling pin. And I'm like, don't bring that out and show me that stupid thing. You know, I said, Mom bashed my head in with that thing and beat me with that thing, you know, and almost killed me with that thing. I said, you're sitting there honoring that thing? But that's that whole family, you know, let's not talk about it. Let's just think the good thoughts. Mom made cookies, you know. It's right that my brother played guitar. He was very good guitar. He was actually in a band. My brother that raped me and sexually abused me was a singer, songwriter, guitar player. He was actually in bands. He was quite kind of not famous, but he was a professional musician. And he was also a very major drug addict, you know. And he also had a lot of mental problems. And he also sexually abused me, you know. So, I mean, I could look at my brother in a different way and say, oh, he was suffering himself, you know. He didn't know what he was doing. Oh, he did know. He was a witch. He was a warlock, a male witch. I think he was getting his initiation rites done by having sexual intercourse with a child, and I wouldn't doubt that for 1 second, because he raped me at 8 years old when I was eight. He was 21, and, I mean, he hurt me over a period of about a year. And so I could easily do, I mean, what other survivors, and I've seen other people do, and just push that other stuff out and say, but I just loved my mom and dad so much, and, you know, I just loved my family. And it's these things are so difficult. They really are. Because for me to admit that the abuse was abuse, and it wasn't just, oh, Mom just had a bad day, or Dad, he just didn't know what he was doing, he's mentally ill, it's totally it's a cover up. And that's what my families had done for years and years and years, knowing that my parents had been brought up on child abuse charges, knowing that they had abused my brother severely, my dad anyway. And that my mother was abusing me severely, you know, and the other siblings too. But me and my brother actually got, I think, the worst of it, if you really want to, I mean, if I want to go there. But it's, these things are so difficult. You know, it's the family. Let's not talk about it. You know, none of my siblings are willing to deal with this stuff. That's why I had to cut them off, because there's only two left now. But I mean, even when others were living, they could never have any real, there was never any real relationship, because we were never really honest with each other. And now that and then I came out with my stuff, and my siblings are like, you know, how dare you? You know, they're not trying to shut me down, but they didn't like it at all that I'd come out public with this stuff and written books and put it out there publicly. And I'm like, that's okay, because abuse is abuse, you know. And what happened to me was wrong. What happens to children out here, this is not a fictional stuff. This is reality, man. And children are dying. And what happened to me could have killed me. And not only that, but it did kill me. And for a long time, I was dead and wanting to be dead. And, I mean, this is the sort of horrific stuff that families want to keep under the carpet. And that's really all part of that bargaining. It's the bargaining, I guess we should say, is part of that. It's that denial bargaining. Yes, but, you know, Mom made the most wonderful cookies and potato salad. And she was so nice, you know, to the neighbors. The neighbors just loved her. Yeah, they did. But she didn't beat up the neighbors. And she didn't call the neighbors horrible names and throw them into walls and throw them out and just be a menace to them while they were growing up. So that's the thing. See, she wasn't abusive to them. They liked her. She was nice to them. But what she did to me was incredibly wrong. And it's the same with my dad. He had lots of friends. See, this is where society, that's why they said, you know, you have to get, another side of bargaining is requiring outside proof that the abuse actually happened. Quite often there isn't any outside evidence, right? Outside proof. And parents, I mean, abusers, especially abuser parents or anybody, abusers don't want to admit that they abused anybody. They think there's nothing wrong with what they've done, you know? And it's like, even if they wanted, even if they knew that they had hurt a child or hurt one of their children, or they might have remorse for it, but they rarely take responsibility for it. Oh, it wasn't my fault. I was abused as a child. Then they make some excuse for it, you know, which was my dad's big thing. He was always making excuses. My mom never made excuses. She would just tell you she'd kill you. But my dad was very much an excuse maker, you know. And it's like, you know, they just get away with it, right? Quite often this stuff, I mean, it obviously doesn't get prosecuted. There's only a few cases that make it to prosecution. And that's only because mainly the children are dead. Somebody's blowing the whistle because the children, they've killed a child, right? This is absolutely pathetic. The children have to die. Now, I'm not doing a child abuse prevention thing here, but what I'm griping about is the fact that evidence is hard to come by. For me, I mean, I've got validation because of just, you know, my parents were brought up on charges, child abuse charges. I mean, that's enough right there to bury them with evidence. Not only that, but I mean, there was all of their children. They abused all of us. And they had 7 children. So it's harder when there's less people around and less people involved. One child, let's say a one child family where there's, you know, 2 adults or 1 adult and 1 child, very difficult to get any sort of evidence there, you know. But, you know, they're talking about evidence of this nature is hard to come by. Adults very rarely admit they were abusive to children. They hardly, they I would say 99% of the time would never admit. So the only evidence is that of the emotional scars left on the victims or the physical scars, right? And then even then, physical scars, it's hard to prove that that's actually from the abuse, right? And so, you know, people say, oh, well, that's from something else, or that must have been you when you fell down, or, you know, they just try to make some other excuse for it. So it's really difficult to get validation. And that's why I say, you know, they said trusting your own feelings and emotions will take time, but it isn't impossible. And I mean, I would just say for people out there with, you know, who are struggling with this stuff, if you don't have validation, you know, you just, and you know you were abused, you stay true to yourself. Because ultimately, you're the only one that can do that for yourself, right? Like in my family, I mean, you know, I cut them off, but basically it was the other way around as well, because once I went public with this stuff, I knew they would cut me off. So I basically cut them off first, and I'm like, I'm done, you know. And because I knew they would just cut me off, and I thought, I'll cut them off first. That way I don't have to deal with them cutting me off. I'll just cut them out of my life because they're not going to be helpful. They're not going to come and hold me and say, I'm so sorry that our brother raped you, and I'm so sorry I didn't know. There's not going to be anybody to come around and say, we're really, you know, this should have never happened to you. It wasn't our fault, but the abuse should have never happened to you. And we love you. We care about you. We want to help you. And, you know, no, none of that. No support whatsoever. So you have to get help yourself, right? And no matter what that is, you know, I mean, we only have about a minute left here. But, I mean, even if you just go, you know, I'm talking, I like anonymous support. I think that's great. I run 2 anonymous support groups. I'm actually put them together and, well, one's with the ASCA and the other one's with SIA, Survivors of Incest Anonymous. So if you want help, get help. You know, look, don't suffer on your own. Don't struggle on your own. You know, make sure that you get help. I won't be back on Friday because I changed the show to next Monday, but we're going to go for an hour. So I really wish you a good week, everybody. Take good care of yourselves. If you're struggling, like I say, call a crisis line. Do something. Call a crisis line. Call somebody, but you get help and you do not struggle and suffer on your own in this, because this is important. I want you to win this fight with me. That's what I said on my show page here. Whatever you do, do not give up. Don't give up. It allows the abusers to win. You keep reaching out. keep looking for help, you know, and you stay alive and you win this fight with me. And I'm serious about that. So I hope you have a wonderful week and a good weekend, and take good, really good care of yourselves, because you certainly do deserve it. And we'll pick up next week with an hour show. We'll have much more time to kind of go through different things and look at coping mechanisms and stuff like that. So you take care, everybody. And we'll talk to you soon.